Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, Adam Gase is going to be hired as the Jets head coach. That should happen any time now. The Jets hiring the former Dolphins coach as their head coach. Former Browns interim head coach Greg Williams under consideration for defensive coordinator with the New York Jets. Former Broncos coach Vance Joseph, who was Gase's defensive coordinator in 2016 in Miami, also a candidate for the D.C. job with the New York Jets. Jets reached out to Gase soon after he was fired by the Miami Dolphins last week. He was only 23-25 in three seasons, but against the Jets, he won five of the six times they played. Adam Gase being hired as the new head coach of the New York Jets. Former Green Bay coach Mike McCarthy got an interview with the Jets, but now he says he plans to coach in the NFL next season. It will not be in 2019. McCarthy said he will sit out the 2019 season. The only job he pursued was the Jets vacancy. He did not get it, so he's ready to step to the sidelines. Oakland A's of Major League Baseball expect Oklahoma quarterback Kyler Murray to declare now for the 2019 NFL draft before the deadline next Monday. That's according to the San Francisco Chronicle. Kyler Murray was a two-sport star at Oklahoma, chosen by the A's with the ninth pick of the Major League Baseball draft in 2018, signed a deal back in June that included a signing bonus of $4.7 million, ready to walk away from that to go into the NFL draft. Draft experts like Mel Kiper and Todd McShay say Murray could be a first-round pick. ESPN's Chris Mortensen says Murray was getting first-round feedback regarding the National Football League. The Los Angeles Chargers are signing kickoff specialist Nick Rose to handle kickoff duties in their wildcard game against New England on Sunday. They've had trouble with the kickoffs. They've allowed the most returns in the NFL during the regular season. Nick Rose kicked in two games for the Chargers at the end of the 2017 regular season. Pro Bowl outside linebacker Thomas Davis says he'll play at least one more season. It will not be with the Carolina Panthers. He announced last night the Panthers told him they're moving on. And the Sabres practicing today head out to Raleigh, North Carolina, play the Hurricanes in Carolina tomorrow night before returning home on Saturday. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Welcome to hour number three of One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. A lot to talk about. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Bills. What was their major accomplishment in 2018? We're getting pretty interesting feedback on this. What's the biggest thing they accomplished? On the Twitter poll, we give you a couple of options. Could it be, in fact, the development and drafting of Josh Allen? A lot of people think that's the number one accomplishment the Bills had in 2018. Was it, in fact, the fact that the defense went from 26th in the National Football League all the way up to second in the National Football League? Was it the fact that the Bills bit the bullet on the salary cap? 26% of you say, yes, that's it. 7% quite earnestly and honestly say, you know, Bills didn't accomplish much. They only won six games. What do you think? The biggest accomplishment for the 2018 Buffalo Bills? Let's talk about it. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or on Twitter, on the tweet sheet. What do you got there, Steve?
Yeah, it's from Derek Tesh. He says, I think it's not only developing Josh Allen, but also developing Edmonds, Milano, and possible diamonds in the rough, Foster and Levi Wallace, as possible starters. A lot of people have pointed to that, this coaching staff's ability to get the most out of guys who weren't highly touted coming out of college. Also from Nick Blake, he says, it's got to be the salary cap. I'm extremely happy about Allen, but being able to rebuild the offense at will this offseason is huge. Top D plus a top O, AFC East champs next season. So, obviously, and we've been living through this the last couple of weeks, optimism runs high after the way they finished Josh Allen. And you think, I was thinking about this last night, the way he ended the season, and one of the things I heard from him after the season was telling, I thought, or hopefully it's telling. They asked him about being able to complete 60% of his passes in the Dolphins game. And he says, they said, because you're a, you know, or you're a 52% completion guy. How'd you get 60% completions? He said, you know, I just was going to take the completions, you know.
Yeah, we decided we needed completions.
We decided that was the game plan. I just wanted to get completions. And to have him say that and to think, well, gosh, you mean all these, you know, guys.
What have you been doing?
Right. I mean, right. So he goes, he just, you get this feeling when you watch him play. He wants to win every play. So he wants to press the ball down the field. He wants to snap off big chunks of yards. And to have Daboll and probably the other guys in the quarterback room sit down and say, you know what? How about this, Josh? Let's just take the completion that's there this week. See how that goes. And it turns into a 42-point outing, right? He threw a couple of interceptions, one for a pick six. But by the same token as well, it was a 42-point explosion and beating a team that that you couldn't get beat a week, 3 weeks before that. Plus, you complete 60% of your passes, and presto chango, it seems that easy.
Yeah.
I had to read that twice when I heard it, you know, and that to me is really, really promising.
Yeah. You know what it says a lot to me about Josh, obviously? It says a lot to me about the coaching that he's been getting and the faith and trust that he has in his coaches, David Culley, the quarterback's coach in particular, and of course, the offensive coordinator.
Brian Daboll.
Brian Daboll, thank you. I mean, he obviously trusts what they tell him. He does what they tell him, I would think. And I think that says a lot about the group that they have working there. Like, hey, let's go for a few more completions this week. Okay, let's see what we can do, right? Simple as that.
And that, yeah, the fact that, you know, he attributed it to just a conscious decision and a game plan says a lot about what he's capable of when he makes a decision about his game and how fast he can improve.
Interesting stuff. On more from the tweet sheet on the Bills' biggest accomplishment in 2018, Nick Blake says, got to be the salary cap. I'm extremely happy about Allen, but being able to rebuild the offense at will this offseason is huge. Top D plus top offense. Oh, you already read that one.
I did that.
AFC East champs next season.
Sorry, I was going to let you go.
No, that's all right. The part about the AFC champs.
AFC East champs. It catches your eye, doesn't it?
Yes. We'll see about that.
It's been a while.
Sipping the Kool-Aid. The top, you didn't read this one.
I did not
read
this one.
The top two choices make this a very tough question. I think that being able to bite the bullet and develop Josh Allen at the same time is magical. I would be willing to bet that if you ask this question after the free agency signing period, handling the cap may get more votes. Really good point. Really good point. They're going to have some resources to use during salary cap when that comes up in March. Are they going to use them all? I don't know.
I doubt that they're going to spend $90 million. Because I don't think there's that many good guys out there, and you don't want to overspend. That's the one thing that I think and I hope that this coaching staff and Brandon being in the front office will stay disciplined. You don't want to overpay. You don't want to just spend it to spend it. You want to get the right guys, and that includes the draft picks as well. And you certainly don't want to go out there and whiff big, right? And you don't want to go out there and like the Jacksonville Jaguars did. You go out and you pay Marcell Dareus, you take over that huge contract, and all you find out, he took it out of gear. You know, I mean, so now you're getting a guy's playing half speed, and you're paying him like an elite player, and that's not good. So the Bills have got to figure out a way to pick, like I said earlier, the right guys, not just talented guys, but get value for the money that they're spending. And that's going to, that's to me, is huge. And we'll see. But right now, I think for all of us, 90 million, that's a number. I don't know who that is yet.
Right. Let's see some faces.
I'll get excited. Right. I'll get excited when they sign two guys that are going to play as well as Jordan Poirier and Micah Hyde.
Right.
When they get two guys at whatever position, right? At two wide receivers that are going to play their positions as well as Jordan Poirier and Micah Hyde play theirs, I'll get excited. Right?
Yep.
That will spell good things for the Bills' future.
Let's take a phone call here. Ken in Batavia. Hello, Ken. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, this is Ken. I think the biggest accomplishment was clearly saving the cap space. You know, it's such a big need for us. You know, the ability to bring in new talent is huge. I think cutting Kelvin Benjamin was critical. You know, it's more than just a salary cap cut. We're setting a precedent, showing that his effort is unacceptable to the rest of the room. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was a huge accomplishment, cutting Kelvin Benjamin. One might look at that and say, why was he, you know, here in the first place? And why did that turn out the way it did? It wasn't that much of a cap. He wasn't cut because of the salary cap. I think you're right about that. He was cut because they wanted to move on and let some other guys play and see what they had there.
He wasn't producing.
Yeah.
And I think, too, it does send a message on some level, particularly if the message in the locker room was received as we perceive it outside the locker room, out here in the general public, if the message was, hey, he wasn't getting it done, he wasn't given a full effort, or he wasn't in the right spot mentally, he's done. If that's the reason and that's the message that got through, I'm sure that that's a good thing.
The only thing is that message may have been sent earlier than it was, right? When was Kelvin cut? It was pretty deep into the season.
If you want
to send a message and use him as the guy to send that message, you might have done that sooner than they did.
I don't think they were willing to live with the void in their roster until Robert Foster emerged. Well, he didn't really emerge until after Benjamin was cut, but when they got to the point where they knew what Robert Foster was before they cut Benjamin, as soon as they realized what Foster could be or was going to be or could give them,
yeah,
I think that's probably when they made the decision.
Kelvin was released with four games left to go before the Jets game, the home Jets game.
And that, you know, that's
12 games into the year.
Right. That's also like a couple of weeks after Robert Foster had that Jet game. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, okay, they're thinking, okay, can he do it every week? Let's see one more week. If he can give it to us one more week, then Kelvin Benjamin's done.
Yeah.
And it's not only they did to Kelvin Benjamin, it was Andre Holmes as well. So they cleared the decks.
With four games to go, they said goodbye to the veteran receivers.
Right.
Let's go with the young guys. Here's a call from Sean in Niagara Falls. Hello, Sean. Welcome.
How's it going, John, Steve?
Pleasure. Great.
You guys.
Thanks, Sean. Good to talk with you.
Good. I want quickly to piggyback on what Steve said. I also agree that in the willingness to also give undrafted people like Foster, even like McLeod, even though he didn't produce, their ability to want to get on the field and that hunger to want to get on the field and produce because they want NFL contracts, as opposed to Benjamin and Holmes who weren't producing. I also think that was a great tell on how this coaching staff wants to work. But the reason for my call is I wanted to see what you guys thought and your take was on the optics of the NFL if New England happened to lose to the Chargers this week and the Colts, who I will be rooting for, to also win. That leaves the AFC Championship game in L.A. in a 30,000 stadium. I'm wondering what you guys' take is on that, well, how the NFL perceives this, because I would assume secretly they're rooting for New England or Kansas City to win.
Well, they always root for
New
England.
Well, that's the thing. Here's the thing, Sean. Here's what you got to know. Certainly there's no question that in certain situations, not only does it look bad, like to have the Chargers in their stadium with 25 or 30,000 seats and having it be mostly whoever would be Indianapolis fans – it looks bad for a minute. The thing they really wish that the Chargers were in a 300,000 seat stadium selling big money tickets to about a gazillion people who want to get in the stadium. Yeah, it's about money. That's the only that's what it's about. And I'll tell you this. I know fans and conspiracy theorists. And me too. I mean, when I put my tinfoil hat on, I kind of do this once in a while too, when you think there's some big grand scheme to orchestrate how these games go. There is not.
Yeah.
There is not. These games are competitive. They are for real. They run the league, make sure they stay as fair and even keeled in every respect as humanly possible. They do not. Now, they may know that they're going to get a financial windfall if the game is in New England rather than L.A. Charger in StubHub, you know, but they are never going to do anything to alter how that goes. They can, they can acknowledge the bottom line difference,
right.
But man, oh man, they don't care.
But Sean, you're not suggesting that. They're not going to try to influence.
I guess I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, yeah.
He's not suggesting that.
No,
I will say this. You know what's number one on the NFL? I mean, the image conscious NFL, number one on their list is TV ratings. Which game will give us the best TV ratings?
Yeah.
And number two, if the game should happen to be in L.A., the AFC Championship game, StubHub Center, you can bet your bottom dollar there's going to be plenty of promos and coming back from breaks, what do you guys call it in the TV business, where all they show you are pictures
billboards
of the construction of the new stadium.
That's right.
This is where the Chargers are going, the Chargers and Rams. Take a look at this. It's going to be spectacular. They will hammer that home on that broadcast.
Sure.
So that you know that this is just a temporary setup. Now, I got to say this, too, and we've talked about this. I loved the game that we did. It wasn't a good game for the Bills, but I loved the vibe and the atmosphere at StubHub Center. I really did. I thought it was kind of a pared down, you know, get rid of all of the baloney, and here's just a football game in a 35,000-seat stadium with people who are into it. I kind of liked it.
Oh,
I think it might be a cool atmosphere. But you're right. It will be filled with Colts fans.
And we've had this conversation as well when we were talking about the television ratings and the revenue streams that the NFL enjoys. The percentage of revenue that comes from ticket sales is getting smaller and smaller percentage-wise. Certainly the numbers are still remaining same, if not growing, because everything's growing exponentially. But the percentage of revenue that is caused by people actually sitting in the stadium is getting to be less and less a picture or less and less a piece of the pie.
Attendance is less important maybe than it has been decades.
And you and I theorize that new stadiums will be perhaps even smaller than currently, so that you can make smaller stadium but higher priced tickets, more amenities, so you're actually like you're a guest of the teams rather than you're going to, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And when we had discussions earlier this show about the new Buffalo setup, whatever it is, renovated stadium, new stadium, don't be surprised if it's significantly smaller venue for the very reason you talk about. It's a more exclusive ticket.
Yeah.
You don't need 73,000
tickets. You can't get in.
Ticket. Yeah.
How much you
want
to pay?
You're going to have to buy season tickets.
That, and, you know, there's always that. The people are like, now you can't get in. They say, well, yeah, I got in because I paid the money. Or I, you know, jumped through these hoops, or I did this or that or the other. You know, we have all these epic stories about it. Even my family has epic stories about getting to, you know, the stadium for the old playoff games when we were playing. And when, you know, say for instance, if it's a downtown stadium, the next one, what if it's only 55,000 seats, but you're sitting in a recliner? You know,
yeah.
People are like, oh, okay, and you've got an open bar, right? I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, how many amenities are we talking about? Certainly those are going to be – that's a different kind of experience.
Yes, it is.
But
it might not be a better experience either.
Right. It might not be a better experience. It might not be as good an atmosphere. But certainly there's something in there where it says, you know what, if I'm paying this kind of money, I want to get taken care of. And the league or the teams are going to say, okay, maybe. But we're only going to have, like, you know, 50,000 seats available, or
yeah,
you know, or whatever. Maybe
yep.
Like a StubHub, it's only going to be 30,000 seats. It's going to be like a theater where you can put your feet up. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's where it's going. I think it's a long way away from that.
Yeah.
But you know, like, you kind of start to think about stuff like that.
Gary Myers, you know him, New York
yeah.
sports writer. He tweets this out about a game in L.A. this weekend, the L.A. Coliseum on Saturday night, 8:15, the home of the Cowboys Rams game. This is his tweet. I think there might be some exaggeration here, but Gary Myers says, the L.A. Coliseum seats 93,600, and I think, this is him saying this, at least 50,000 will be Cowboys fans Saturday night. 50,000 of the 93,000, he says. When the Rams were in St. Louis for two decades, a whole generation of fans in the L.A. area attended Cowboys training camp in Oxnard. Why are they America's team? Read my book. It's a promo for his book. But more than half of the fans Saturday night in L.A. are going to be Cowboys fans? Does that sound right?
Maybe.
Not because of training camp, right? Just they are, as much as it makes me want to vomit to say it,
franchise.
They are America's team. They might have 50,000. I don't know about more than half, but there's going to be a lot of Cowboys fans in the Coliseum on Saturday night.
Yeah. And it's been that way not just for the Rams, but obviously – for the Chargers.
Chargers, yeah.
I mean, both those, they went out there, and it's a quintessential, you can call it what you want. I don't want to get ugly, but it's a money grab. They
yeah.
knew it's a huge market for television. You can jack up the prices because everything's expensive out there. People expect to pay it. You can have a whole spectrum of everything from a $2 seat to a $2,000 seat or more, $20,000 seat. And you can have your franchise enjoy the benefits of it. And now they got two franchises there. It's going to be amazing to see how that franchise does when local people have to support it, when it's not that big a deal to go out there anymore, when it's not the destination that StubHub Center is. You know what I mean? I don't know. I know that the players – And the coaches, and you feel it. You go in, I mean, you've seen highlights. The Chargers in StubHub Field is the most amazing spectacle, and it is an absolute consequence of a poorly run franchise making poor business decisions with a poor relationship with the city that they were in since they were their inception, ending up in a small soccer stadium with 85% of the people in the stands are for the other team and a home game. I mean, it's a total chain of consequences that have happened to the San Diego Chargers that are now the L.A. Chargers that is makes you look at it and go, what the heck, man?
They will tell you, and I don't necessarily agree with this, they will tell you that it's all going to be worth it when they get in that new playpen.
Oh, it's all going to be worth it for three people, the members of the Spanos family.
Yeah.
It'll be worth it for three people.
Right.
And like one of the analysts, and it's easy to say, you go out there, and one of the analysts doing one of the Charger game goes, man, where's all the Charger fans? They're in San Diego.
You're right.
They're not in L.A.
Right.
They're in
You're
San
right.
Diego.
Yep.
It's just.
Here's Mike in Oakville with some thoughts on this. Mike, Oakville, Ontario. Go ahead, Mike. Hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, before I start, Murph, I love how objective you are when it comes to the Bills and the NFL, and I just want to add my vote to Mr. Tasker in the Hall of Fame.
So, okay, gotcha, Mike. Wait a minute, Mike, you're in Ontario. I don't think we count Canadian votes.
No, he's
you're not
kidding,
registered
Mike.
To vote.
I'm going to find that offensive. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
My brother lives in Long Island, and Tasker's kid plays in Hamilton. So I guess we can call it a song.
Well, all right, you know what? With the exchange, we'll give you like 2/3 of a vote.
Oh, wow. You're the ugly American.
2/3 of a vote. It's all
sorry, Mike. My partner, the ugly American. Go ahead.
I don't take offense. My brother's the same way, too. He's born Canadian, but now an American. So he's an American first. And I love
you saw him. The light.
But anyways, back to this. The Chargers do win the AFC Championship game. Could they not host the game at LA Coliseum or another college stadium?
No, I don't. Well,
no.
I guess there's a chance for that. That's a good question. And if the league wanted to step in, I mean, there's no question that the Chargers have no historical allegiance to StubHub. And there's no question that they could go to another venue if the league could make it happen. I mean, let's face it, the league's the 800-pound gorilla. If they wanted to flex their muscle, I mean, they got a game in Detroit. They got a Buffalo home game in Detroit in the matter of 48 hours.
Yeah. But you know what, Mike? I think that I'm wondering what Steve thinks. I don't think it matters to the league how many people will be there. I really don't. It's about TV ratings. It's about who's going to – if you ask the powers that be and Park Avenue and NFL offices right now, what are you looking for this Sunday from these matchups? They're going to say, we're looking for this game because this will have the biggest TV ratings.
And you know what?
If you ask the owners of the Chargers, they wouldn't have any issues with going to L.A. Coliseum because it's more seats.
It might be more seats, but in the L.A. Coliseum, think about this. For 35,000 seats, you could charge $1,000 a ticket for an AFC championship game, and at the Coliseum, it's only $30 a seat. You might get the same bump in revenue by staying in StubHub and just jacking the prices up because somebody's going to pay it.
Yeah, no, you're right, Steve. That's a good point.
I mean, they can charge whatever they want for those seats because it's not a set-in-stone thing yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no doubt. Listen, guys, great show. I'm going to continue to listen.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate it, even though I insulted his country of origin twice.
Well, you didn't. You were good-natured, just.
I always am.
Right.
That's my middle name.
Nothing. There's nothing sinister about you.
Phil on the line from Rochester. Hello, Phil. Go ahead.
How are you doing today?
Great.
I don't know the conference must this year. Last year we were a playoff team.
Yeah.
Yeah, Phil, do you think this team this year would have beaten last year's team if they played?
I'm not so sure.
Really? I don't know. I think they would. I think they would, actually. What else you got, Phil?
That was just about it. I mean, everybody, I hope they do well. Those kids don't die. But I don't, it's hard to say they accomplished something when they. They had more wins last year.
No, that's legitimate, Phil.
It's true.
They won three more games a year ago.
The bottom line is they didn't win as many games they did a year ago.
That's legitimate.
And they're a 6-10 team because that's what they earned. So we're not here saying, hey, it's the greatest franchise ever, you know, and now they're proving it. They were 6-10. But they did do things that are necessary, I think, for a lot of people moving forward to move away from a 17-year drought in the playoffs, from a team that is continuously washed through coaches who were not successful, to a franchise that looks like not only would it be a franchise that has a chance to be competitive every year, but be a playoff team most years, and also be one that year in, year out, has a lot of optimism both moving forward and in the current season. So I think they did lay the foundation for a lot of things going forward, even though on the field they were just a 6-win team.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to Bob in Cheektowaga. Hello, Bob. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Two things to start with. I'd like to put Steve in the Hall, without a doubt. And
Don't look at me. I didn't bring this up. You're looking at me. I didn't. Did I? Go ahead, Bob. He's looking at me like I started this.
We're going to ixnay this vote thing. We're going to take that off. Go ahead, Bob.
And I'd also like to see Kyle Williams on the Wall of Fame.
Bing.
Yeah, we can start that.
My big thing is this stadium issue. As long as they keep the politicians out of it, they're fine. Probably Steve won't remember, but I'm sure Murph will. That years ago, Eddie Cottrell was going to build a stadium on his own.
Yeah.
With his own money. And
Lancaster.
Yep, and the politicians turned it down, and we ended up giving Eddie Cottrell $63 million anyway in a lawsuit.
That's right, because they signed a deal that wasn't done. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's ridiculous. And to put it downtown is absolutely insane. I mean, you can't get downtown in the good weather. What the hell are you going to do in the bad weather?
You can get downtown.
Come on, Bob. You can get downtown. Where do you live?
You can get anywhere you want in
20
minutes, man.
You can Cheektowaga. Come on, Bob. You can get from Orchard Park to Tonawanda in 35 minutes.
Yeah. Look, they got that stadium survey out there. I haven't seen it. You took a look at it. I don't know what it says. I don't know what it means. I don't know what impact it has. Everybody's got an opinion about the stadium. You can't keep the politicians out of it, Bob, because you're going to need some public money, and they're the people who control the public purse strings. So yeah. I think, look, survey or not, the community is going to have to come to some sort of consensus, right? This is what we want. This is where we want it. This is what we're willing to spend. Does that survey move that down the road a little bit in that regard? I don't know. I don't know what they do with the results. I don't know where they go. As I said, I haven't seen the survey. It's got to be a public decision. But all elements of the public, right, including politicians, the people who determine where the public money should go.
Here's the thing. I think the poll that they're out there with this that they're putting out, they're going to try and find out how much money fans are going to be willing to spend week to week, year to year on tickets and therefore get an idea of how much debt they can put into this stadium and pay off without dipping into other parts of the revenue. So they're going to find out how big a stadium they can build given what their revenue streams are going to be and how much they can pay off and how long it's going to take. It's just like building a house. What are your monthly payments going to be? How are you going to pay for them? Are you going to be able to do it? And this is how big a house you can afford. And that may be as big a question as there is right now. There's certainly a million other questions that are going to pop up. But they're just right now, they're trying to find out what kind of payments they can make on a new house. And they're trying to find out whether it's best to fix this house and live with it already paid for, or to build a new one that's all a lot nicer and hopefully make the payments on it. And that's where they're at.
We're going to take a break. It's One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
That went nowhere.
Even I, right? That went nowhere. We just talked for 5 minutes, and it went absolutely nowhere. Welcome
back
to the show.
Michael, this is the life we've chosen.
Nowhere. Last 5 minutes gone. We'll never get those 5 minutes back. John Murphy and Steve Tasker here until 3. We apologize. Moose Johnston, who is busy, I would think, as the general manager of the San Diego Commanders.
San Antonio
Commanders of the Alliance of American Football. Unable to be with us today. We'll try to get him up some other time. Get him on the show. Moose. Yeah,
can't
come
take
on, Moose.
5 minutes for us.
I think that's cool. I really think, and it starts February 9th, I think the Alliance of American Football, I think we're all going to be watching that.
I think it's going to be really compelling.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like they got it together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It sounds like they're kind of...
We know the people who are running it. They got it together.
Yeah, they're really on it. And plus, they're doing it with the full blessings of the NFL. They're doing it with a schedule that coincides with the NFL for the express purpose of developing players for the NFL. That in and of itself is something different than any other sports league has ever had. You know, it's a minor league football, and it's doing it on a professional level, and all those guys are getting paid a good buck to give it a shot, and they're getting paid for their time and for their risk and for their careers and for the chance, and for them it's an opportunity, a big opportunity to play at a higher level in a different environment that is more like the NFL, that gives them a chance. So I think February 9th, it's going to be a lot of fun to see.
I do too. Can't wait. I
want
to talk to Moose
about
it.
They're going.
Hey, let's take a couple of phone calls here as we make our way up towards the top of the hour. We'll go to Tim in Tonawanda. Hello, Tim. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. How are we doing today?
Okay.
Good.
I thought the biggest accomplishment on the offense for the Bills was Josh Allen being able to run the ball like he did. The only part is, I don't think we want that as our biggest accomplishment.
I think I understand what you mean.
That's a double-edged sword. Yeah, you're right. It's not ideal having your quarterback lead you in rushing, correct, Tim?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not ideal. But you know what? It's nice to have in your pocket. I still think this. I've said this before. Josh Allen is the closest thing I've seen to a guy like Cam Newton in the league, coming into the league. Certainly, he's got a lot to learn as a pocket passer, like Cam Newton did when he came in. But even now, Cam Newton's a much better pocket passer because you just, as a running quarterback, and Josh Allen, you'll say, is the same way, they get tired of getting hit. They'd much rather stand in the pocket and make throws than run around and take shots. And I think Josh Allen will learn that as well. But I do know this, Cam Newton at his best is, and Josh Allen as well, the two of them, they are the best short yardage goal line running backs in the National Football League.
Yeah.
Because they can drop back and throw it, and the defense has to respect it, and that leaves them space to jump forward and get a half a yard in a spot where they really need it. So it's a great thing to have in your back pocket, but you're right, Tim, it's not ideal.
How many people do you think Josh Allen will run into this offseason, maybe early in the offseason before they come back here in April? How many people do you think he'll run into and that say to him, dude, you don't want to run like that anymore next year? I saw what you did. Great year. Congratulations. But you won't be around. I bet that's a question for him when they
too
come
many.
Back in April. A lot are going to tell
many.
Him, dude, don't do that. I see
so
what you did.
He'll get so sick of it.
But they make a point, and there may be people who care about him. Former coaches, former teammates, friends, family members. Dude, don't run that much next year. Do me a favor. Right? They'll hear that a lot.
Yeah. Do you really think he needs to hear it?
Do you think he knows it?
Yeah.
Okay. Why did he run so much then?
Because he doesn't know what else to do. You got the ball in your hand. You got the ball in your hand and there's no place to throw it. That's what you do.
If you were his uncle, wouldn't you say it to him?
Dude. I'd say it once.
Okay. That's all. That's all it'll take.
But he doesn't need to hear it from Charlie Sixpack and Joey Bag of Donuts.
He'll hear it whether he needs
to
or not.
I know. It's probably going to be 1,000 times too many. The only person he needs to hear it from is Brian Daboll and Derek Anderson and Matt Barkley.
But there might be people who tell him that it registers after a while. That's all
well,
I'm
that's
saying.
Just said. That's what I'm saying. Those three guys that will probably register with him.
There might be others.
And listen,
friends,
and you think,
family members.
And you don't think.
Teammates.
You don't think somebody was telling him that after the Charger game? The first start of his professional career?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's enough. It's enough.
Patrick in Los Angeles. Hello, Patrick. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Okay.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to address a point that Steve brought up earlier. I usually always agree with Steve.
Love of course him. You do. Why wouldn't you?
He's the best, right?
Yeah.
Ding! Now get to why you really called, Patrick.
I love the exclusivity at StubHub. I went to the Peterman game last...
It's known now as the Peterman game.
That is awesome. That is awesome. That
I'm
is
sorry.
Awesome. Patrick,
I'm
that
sorry,
is perfect.
Patrick. That just threw
go
me.
Go ahead. You like the...
I was there at the Peterman game.
Great. All right, go ahead, Patrick. What do you remember about the exclusivity of StubHub?
I sat, you know, I was 16 rows up on the, on the Bills side. I sat right behind O'Leary's family, who are great people. I had awesome seats. It was an amazing experience. But this year, with the team winning, you're not getting tickets anymore. I live here in Los Angeles. It's not happening. So what they did was they created exclusivity to make it very marketable. And that what I'm saying is like we got to the stadium, it was $150 to park.
Whoa.
Stadium.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
And how many cars could you get in there for $150? Just one?
one parking spot.
Wow.
What we did is my son and I turned around and left, and we parked and we Ubered in for $6.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Listen, I'm all with you, Patrick. And you go to Foxborough, and it's
it's not 150.
No, but it's 75. It's 50 to 75 bucks to park there, and you're still a mile and a half away. So it's big money. Go ahead, Patrick. What else?
In the middle of nowhere, still too. I've been to Boston, and I've stayed in the hotel where all the players end up staying out there. Like I travel for a living, and it's just to me is that if we can downsize things. Buffalo has lost some population, and if we can downsize the stadium to 60,000, 55,000, and make it a more intimate and raucous experience and raise the level, like I'm not talking about the Pagulas raising the prices to make it, an unachievable dream to go to a game. What I'm saying is, it's just like, if we need to eliminate a couple of the upper rows, let's do it.
Might happen. I don't know. Again, there's no plan on paper yet for that to happen, but it might happen. I think that's a logical way for that to proceed. I don't know, Patrick, if they need to make it a more raucous experience. It's pretty raucous as it is. Right?
Yeah. What? I don't want to go down that road. I was going to bring up the flaming tables. But
Yeah.
I mean, it is
in favor of the flaming tables.
I am, totally. It is a unique experience even now here. And it's because of the tradition and history and, you know, and the nostalgic part of being a Bills fan here in Buffalo and growing up in this city and being here and is part of the heritage of a lot of people. They do the same thing that they do because they're – parents brought them here, their families brought their friends and their buddies started when they were kids, and they've grown into it. It's their place. It's a public treasure to be out here and in this stadium, no question about it, but for a lot of people, not everybody. And some people we've had – and here's the problem with – we've already had people call in the show and say, you can't put the stadium downtown. It'd be catastrophic. And then other people saying it's got to be downtown. That's where it belongs. So who are you going to listen to? You know, I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy. And I get this thing, and I'm totally into it, having it be a more difficult ticket to attain, where all of a sudden in Buffalo you've got a string of 200 sellouts because you can't get a ticket. You know. It seems backward, but, you know, look at Lambeau Field. They sell out every field in every game in that stadium, and they've added seats over the years, and it's a different venue than it was when it first started. So I don't know where the happy medium is, but how big is too big and how small is too small?
Time now for NFL True and False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Here we go. A couple of NFL issues. Number one, true or false, Chargers have road field advantage. Los Angeles 7-1 on the road this year. They won at Baltimore last Sunday. They're going across country again this Sunday to play the Patriots on Sunday at 1:05 p.m. Eastern time. Chargers have road field advantage. True, false? I'll say true. They're pretty good on the road. They're a veteran team that it does not get a big home field advantage, as we've just got done talking about. I do think they're a good road team that gives them a bit of an edge. At least somewhat of an edge this Sunday in New England. Yes, true.
Absolutely. They're the best road team in the NFL this year for good reason. I think I don't know how much of it you can attribute to their poor facility at home, but certainly on the road, they are good. They win games and they go on the road. It doesn't scare them. They went into Seattle and won there this year. Another playoff team. They're tough to beat. Good teams always travel better than bad teams, and defensive teams usually travel better. But when you've got a veteran quarterback who's gifted like Phillip Rivers is, and they got both sides of the ball playing well, hey, they don't lose on the road. They haven't lost thus far this year, and you got to give them the advantage. There's something to see this year. This is their year, I think. If they're ever going to win one under the current conditions of the league, this is the year they could do it.
Part two, NFL true or false. The Cardinals will trade Josh Rosen and draft Kyler Murray number one. A lot of this came as a result of a piece of video from last fall, I believe it was, with Cliff Kingsbury talking about if he were in position to do so, he would certainly draft Kyler Murray, the quarterback from Oregon, number one. Now he is in position. Oklahoma, yeah. Now he is in position to do that. And people are throwing that right back in his face now. Well, there you are. But the Cardinals will trade Josh Rosen and draft Kyler Murray number one. I say false. In fact, I saw I'm not going to be able to find it here, but I did see a tweet or somebody talk to the Chargers people and or the Cardinals people rather, and they said, no, we're not trading Josh Rosen. Is he not a better prospect than Kyler Murray? Rosen had a rough year, but overall, isn't he a much better quarterback prospect than Kyler Murray? I think he is. Despite his rough year, that's false.
Yeah, I think it's false as well. I think Josh Rosen's still a really good pro prospect. He's going to get some help around him. Kyler Murray, while he is a great athlete and a really good college quarterback, he's 5'10". I think that gives him some limitations. And take it from a guy who's 5'9". It's tough to play in a giant man's game. And it's and I'm not saying it can't be done. Doug Flutie was about that height. He's a little taller than me, but he was – it can probably can be done, will be done in the future, never say never. But I don't think Kyler Murray's the guy that's going to do it. I don't think they're trading Josh Rosen at all. There's no way.
Ian Rappaport, less than an hour ago, tweet, checked with a high-ranking Arizona Cardinal source who called this notion of trading quarterback Josh Rosen, quote, ludicrous, not happening. I don't think it's happening. I think he's a good prospect.
It's crazy talk.
He's got a lot of talent.
He's an okay prospect.
Josh Rosen?
No.
Oh, yeah, he's a better prospect than Kyler Murray, for sure.
Josh Rosen's still a good pro prospect, he's a pro player, and he's got a lot of upside. He hasn't played well yet, but I don't think they're anywhere close to giving up on him in Arizona after the kind of season they put together.
All right, there you go. NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Steve and I coming back for more, believe it or not, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Well, what do we learn from today's show? It is brought to you by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Dominique Foxworth, one of my favorite guests, joined us. He is a columnist now for theundefeated.com. He appears on ESPN, played 7 years in the league as a defensive back. Dominique Foxworth wrote a story a couple of years ago about what should go into hiring a head coach in the NFL, particularly apropos this week with all the coaching moves made this week. Dominique Foxworth has some specific thoughts on what makes a good head coach in the NFL.
The logic behind the way we hire coaches is a little flawed in that we try to find the coordinator who was the best. But the skills that are required to be a good coordinator are not the skills that are required to be a good head coach. So the head coach is the only person who can impact and cultivate a culture. And I think that is all the soft skills that we don't really think are that important. But building relationships and building bridges between the coaches and the players and building bridges between the players and each other and the team and the fans, like those things are the things that I think drive teams to work harder than other teams and prepare better than other teams and win games. And that's how you have sustained success in this league with a coach like that.
He's right. He's absolutely right, Dominique Foxworth. Again, schemes are somewhat important, but being the head coach means you are in charge of everything. Steve, we're in agreement on this. And I think the Bills are well positioned here. Look, the trend in the league over the last 2 days now has been hire the hot young offensive coordinator. Okay, go ahead. You might get lucky. He might be a good head coach. And I understand why teams do that, because that's the talent pool available, but that's not what makes a head coach successful.
And it's
being
also
a hot young coordinator who can call plays.
It is a quarterback-driven league, no question about it. And you got to have a guy to handle it, but that doesn't mean only an offensive guy can coach him up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. John Harbaugh is a great coach. He's a special teams coordinator. Bill Belichick was a defensive coordinator. Who can argue with his success? John Fox, who was with Denver, with Chicago, with Carolina, got Carolina to a Super Bowl, was a great coach. He was a defensive coach. There's exceptions to everything. So I think you're right. I think we're well positioned. Sean McDermott has handled this staff and this culture and their development, I think, in an outstanding way. And there are examples all over the league. You don't have to be a young quarterback whisperer to be a successful head coach.
And earlier this week, it appeared that that was what everybody was doing.
You couldn't hire anybody who was not that.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Hey, on Twitter today, we asked the question, and on the phone lines, we asked the question about the Bills. What was their biggest accomplishment in 2018, the 2018 season? Your responses, most of you thought that the Bills' biggest accomplishment this year was drafting and developing their potential franchise quarterback. In fact, 64% said that. 26% said they bit the bullet on the salary cap. That was big. 7% say, you know, they didn't accomplish that much. 3% said that improving the defense. All right. Tomorrow's show looks like it'll be pretty good. J.P. Lossman's going to join us, talk about the national championship game. He had a role to play in Clemson's victory, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Talk with J.P. tomorrow. Production assistants George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torino, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer Jay Harris. We will see you tomorrow at 12 noon with the Friday edition of One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.